You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. Will Detroit be able to pay its bills after bankruptcy? Bridge Magazine's Mike Wilkinson is reporting on the city post-bankruptcy and beyond. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
And he's joined by one of our regular Stateside voices, Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University professor, expert on municipal finances, and he's now writing a book about Detroit's financial history dating back to the 1950s. Good to have you back, Eric.
Hello.
Mike, there is so much attention right now focused on the right now in Detroit, the grand bargain and winning concessions from workers and retirees and the upcoming bankruptcy trial before Judge Stephen Rhodes. Your piece takes us beyond that. What's the main question you're asking?
Well, I think a lot of people wonder that after Judge Rhodes makes his decisions in court and whether there's a deal beforehand or not, can the city, with what is removed from its balance sheet, pay the bills that it's going to have? I think there's a suspicion that the city has been cash-strapped for a long time, which it has in lieu of it has had these bills that have been staggering in terms of its debt. But will it have enough in terms of the money it brings in from the casinos, from income tax, from property tax? Will it have enough to pay what's there?
And as you point out in your piece, Detroit really has some advantages that other cities don't have in terms of the kind of revenue that comes in, right?
Absolutely. In Michigan, it's the only city that gets the wagering taxes from the casinos to the tune of about $175, $180 million. As Eric well knows, it has a utility tax that no other city levies, 5% on electric, on gas. And it has the highest income tax in the state. It has property tax rate that for large cities, it's the highest in the state. So revenue-wise, I mean, it is taxing a lot of people, a lot of money, and it raises a lot of money. We compared it to a number of other cities, and it's not raising the most per capita of any city, but it's also far from the bottom. I mean, it's raising more money than Cincinnati, Chicago, Kansas City, Orlando in terms of per person, and those are substantial resources.
But as you write in your bridge piece, revenues alone do not a budget make. And for that, Eric Scorsone, I want to get your thoughts. Assuming that Kevin Orr's plan of adjustment is approved by Judge Rhodes and the billions in debt goes away, does Detroit generate enough money with this revenue to get itself back on track?
To answer that question, we have to think about what is Detroit going to spend the money on, because ultimately that's what really matters. So if the city decides there's certain core services and it can manage the cost of those core services, then I think it can make a go of it. And it may identify those, you know, police, fire, whatever those core services are. That's really going to be the critical process. And then decide, can we farm out other things, privatize, outsource? You know, it's going to have to manage it, because the truth is it would be very easy to overspend again, as quite frankly Detroit has in much of its history, and that's going to be the real challenge for the political leadership of Detroit.
And with the experience of having Kevin Orr having the reins of power, and now with Mayor Duggan and his team in place, do you see enough of a change in political leadership to feel confident, shall we say, that Detroit won't slip into those bad old spending habits, Eric?
I'm cautiously confident, I would say. I think there's some good signs right now of maybe some more disciplined spending behavior that is going to go on, but it's going to have to happen for 5 or 10 years, so it's kind of hard to project will that happen in the future, because it's easy to kind of start off on a good base, but then costs start to creep up over time. And so the challenge is in that really maintaining the discipline for many years to come. I think Detroit's run a deficit in about 70% of its fiscal years in the last, say, 50 years. So I think, can we change that behavior? Can we maintain discipline on department spending? Can the mayor ensure that this is what we have to do and other things either aren't going to be done or going to be done by somebody else? And it's going to be hard politically, because there's always going to be demands on mayors and councils to do more, especially in a city like Detroit. So we'll see if they can manage it or not. I'm cautiously optimistic right now.
Yeah, Eric, and we have the situation in the city because of the emergency manager and the position that Mayor Duggan is in, that so many of the tough political decisions are not being made. They don't have to be made. We've had a lot of labor agreements that have come out of this process. And you're right, what's going to happen 5 years now when council has asked for more money for these unions, which have taken such a substantial hit over the years? Decisions that 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago were kind of easy to make in terms of, you know, giving more money, giving loosening the rules on the unions. And yeah, we are going to see a time where the mayor is in control of the budget, the council is in control of some of those reins as well, and now the decisions are going to become political.
I'm speaking with Mike Wilkinson, Bridge Magazine writer, whose piece in Bridge recently is titled, Can Detroit Pay Its Bills Post-Bankruptcy? And Mike's joined by Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University professor and an expert on city finances, who is writing a book about Detroit's financial history. It dates back to the 1950s. And Eric, really, as we have heard, that is where the root of all of today's miseries really began, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, basically, the reason Detroit has an income tax, for example, is because it underfunded its pension systems after World War II. And the only way it could pay for it was to incorporate the first income tax in Michigan, even before the state had one. And there was legal questions at the time of whether that was even feasible, but it ended up happening. Now, you can say, well, that was good because that was a solution. The problem is that solution kind of continued to create problems for the city over time as people responded to incentives by moving out of the city. And I'm not going to say the income tax caused all of that, but it certainly contributed. And so even on tax policy, the city's going to have to ask, we have a lot of taxes. Does that really make sense? Maybe we need to reduce some taxes or shift the tax system. The property tax system in Detroit is very problematic. You know, can we make a change there? What does that mean for revenues going forward? So it's not just going to be spending. There's going to be a lot of tax policy questions. The utility users tax is declining. It's really an antiquated tax at this point. People are getting rid of landlines. You know, how do we really deal with that kind of issue? The other thing we should probably discuss in this context is this control board that's going to be in place.
Yes.
And really, what is their role going to be? And are they going to have the power and authority to, you know, Mike talked about, which he's exactly right, what's going to happen when people are asking for more because they've taken a lot of cuts. And that's, you know, it's understandable. But who's going to put that discipline on? What is the role of that control board?
And what do you see? How do you see, we're looking at tea leaves because we're talking about something that's in the future, but what is your sense, Eric, with respect to what the control board can do or should be doing?
Well, I think similar to New York City, New York is really a model of success, at least financially and probably economically as well. And I think the control board there, you know, did impose a lot of discipline on the city. Things like revenue forecasting was much better done after that. Union contracts were more reasonable. You know, not that there weren't any increases, but they were in line with, you know, cost of living. And I think this control board is going to need staff to be on the ground, you know, really looking at the numbers all the time. I think the control board members are going to be needed to give the authority to say no or to veto certain decisions if they feel they're inappropriate. And the governor, whoever it is in the future, is going to need to kind of keep a hands off, let that board do its work. Hopefully politics won't interfere with it because that would create problems then.
And one of the things we have to talk about at length is as far as looking ahead, and I'd like the thoughts of both of you, we have to talk about the retiree pension and health care costs, this monster legacy debt. And I'm wondering for both of you, is enough being done today by Kevin Orr and his team to help the city out from under these legacy costs and give it a balance sheet that is sustainable for the future? Mike, what did you find?
Well, I mean, the issues that he first attacked were on this level. I mean, he's gone in and kind of gutted the health care responsibilities as he could. That was not constitutionally protected in Michigan, unlike the pensions. And he's gone after a couple of the big problems. One, the swaps deal that was the architect was the Kwame Kilpatrick administration, and that's one of the problems we have. One of the biggest insurers is challenging an attempt to erase a substantial amount of that debt. So he's going after that, and that alone was contributing, you know, $200 million to the expenditures of the city. So it is an important thing that he had to do. Whether or not it is enough, because a lot of people are going to feel pain at the other end of this, whether it's a retiree or it's a current worker. You know, it is a legacy cost. I mean, Eric mentioned, I mean, we had the income tax. We have an income tax that's added to the city's, you know, revenue basket that didn't really create any additional services for the city so much as, you know, they didn't say, okay, we're gonna open a bunch of parks, we're gonna do this for schools. It was to pay off this legacy debt. So maybe it's an attempt to kind of right that ship a little bit, but whether or not it's enough, again, we won't know until it all comes out in the wash.
What's your sense, Eric?
I think it's workable. I think certainly the retiree health care burden was the biggest problem facing the city. And I think that has been addressed. So that helps in the short term. But, you know, as I said before, it's going to come down to discipline because even if you reduce the debt burden, And we see this in a lot of corporate bankruptcies. Corporations go in, they reduce the debt, and then 3 years later, they're back in bankruptcy. And it's going to be the same challenge for Detroit. Can it maintain discipline, spend only what it needs to spend, maintain cost control, budget control? And if it can do that, then I think it can manage through this process, and the debt burden reduction will be significant and probably enough.
So let's say that the discipline can be achieved and those financial decisions can happen. Are there not deep-rooted problems that make it almost impossible to believe that Detroit can go forward and upward, whether we're talking poverty and unemployment rates and property values? Is that too much holding Detroit back to offset any of the kind of hard work that's being done now?
I think we have to remember Detroit sits in the context of a state and a country that is facing really significant economic challenges right now. The bankruptcy is going to help, and I think it'll help stabilize city government, but that's different from the city itself, and I think we would expect any city to provide basic municipal services. That's not really a competitive advantage. That's something you should be doing. We got to get that right. But let's remember, you know, we have a country facing a lot of long-term unemployed people, an economy that's not really growing at its full potential. You know, as the U.S. continues to struggle economically from this recession, I don't think we can expect Detroit to do dramatically better necessarily until the country and even the state kind of comes back to normal.
So I hear you saying there's nowhere to go but up, but let's not overpromise where things could go.
When you're really low, you can absolutely come up. And it's already happening. We know this. We can look at downtown and midtown and see the things happening, the excitement. And that's fantastic, and I hope it continues. But for the broader city, my concern is, are we going to see a city of two have and have-nots? Because, you know, what's going to happen with the neighborhoods, you know, versus midtown, downtown? You know, I mean, the M1 rail is going to help. But, again, that's really only serving that corridor. We're going to have to see where it goes over the next few years.
We see such blight and poverty and almost hopelessness 4 miles off of Woodward in any direction. And a lot of the money,
if not even closer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I apologize. Yeah. I mean, in some cases, it's hundreds of yards. You know, we have a commitment from Kevin Orr to spend $1.4 billion from the savings. Again, you know, financing some of the operating expenditures here. And a lot of that money is probably going to be poured into the neighborhoods to fix with lighting, to make sure that the blight is removed, that the lights are on, that the police are on patrol.
Mike Wilkinson is the computer-assisted reporting specialist at Bridge Magazine. His piece, Can Detroit Pay Its Bills After Bankruptcy, from a recent edition at BridgeMI.com. And Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University municipal finance expert. Always good to talk with you, Eric. And Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.